Volkswagen. We had a pretty big yard and it had a number of maple trees in it, but there was enough room between the maple trees to fit a Volkswagen Bug. And so Dad sent me out and gave me a few instructions. And I spent the first day starting the car, popping the clutch, stalling the car, starting the car, popping the clutch, stalling the car, starting the car, popping the clutch, stalling the car, over and over again. I went to bed that night so frustrated. I couldn't quite coordinate it. And all night long, my feet were working, just going back and forth and trying to think about it. Next morning, I got in the car, took off. I've been driving a standard transmission ever since. But that process has been all of my life. I learn it in my head, but then I have to practice it until my body cooperates. Trying to get a little more pressure on the gas as you let up gently on the clutch and get that figured out. Well, that translates to learning to play baseball. I know I taught my kids growing up, catch with your hands, not your face. And you just got to get that all coordinated. And then there's basketball and football, tennis, racket, Mario Brothers, and everything else. And just when you think you've got everything you possibly need to know down, you're ready for life, you're mature now, you're baked, they come up with something new. Zoom calls. Applying for Medicare. You get a smart TV. I don't know why they trusted me with a smart TV. I don't know if you ever got anything from IKEA, but it all comes in pieces with a little wrench and instructions. You got to do it one step at a time. They used to say everything I ever needed to know in life I learned in kindergarten. Oh, if that were only true. Now the learning curve just continues. I learned it in my head, but it takes a while for my body to catch up to it. Everything my dad told me about driving a standard was true. My brother gave me good instruction on it, but it was learning. Only through practice we learn how to drive. We learn how to do different things in life. Now, imagine if you were blind and you had to learn all these things to navigate life with. And then somebody comes by, and all of a sudden you're able to see. Just how valuable would that person be in your life? That was the true experience of the fellow in today's text, John chapter 9 and verse 1. As he went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" "Neither this man nor his parents sinned," said Jesus, "but this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. As long as it's day, we must do the works of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Jesus and his disciples come upon a blind man. Verse 8 clues us into the fact that he was a beggar. He's begging by the side of the road. I read through the text several times trying to figure out just how did this thing work. You know, we're just given a summary, a synopsis of the different things that happened. But what was it like in real life? I can imagine there must have been a conversation, right, that they figured out he's born blind. I doubt that he had a little sign out front, born blind, please drop a few shekels, you know, something like that. So it must have been a conversation. I picture it going something like this. "Hello there, my good man." "Hello. How long have you been blind?" "My whole life. I was born blind." So Jesus and his entourage are going along and they come upon a blind beggar, a very common thing in their day. And their group, we know, gave to the poor. They often stopped and helped somebody out. So you can see the whole group of guys is coming. There's this one little fella, one lonely fella, by the side of the road, and they all stop in front of him. The conversation ensues, and as soon as the fella responds, one of the disciples pipes up and says, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" That's a little embarrassing, don't you think? That, you know, a guy just blurts this out right in front of the fella. Wouldn't that be better as an aside, like, hey, Jesus, why is this guy blind? What, did he sin or was it his parents? You know, but right there in front of the guy. I can imagine the fellow thinking, I'm sitting right here, you know. Drop some coins and move on, you moron. But of course, he's got to be polite because he wants to get an offering from these people. And this isn't the first time he's heard stuff like that. This is what they believe. This is what they taught. Have you ever been taught something that wasn't right and you didn't find out till later? And it might have been, my dad used to like to joke around a little bit. I remember when we were kids, he would say, you see those signs that say Falling Rock? That was left there by an Indian chief. And he's looking for his long-lost son, Falling Rock. And so while we're going, I want you to be looking off into the... If you see the Indian, you let me know, and I'll let the chief know that we spotted Falling Rock. Yeah. And I remember we're going down the road one time, and it said, Monroeville 3, Pittsburgh 14. And he would say that was the baseball scores. And I was always mystified that how they won by that margin all the time. So it explains a lot of who you see before you today, some of the things that were explained to me. And you know, they kind of, you got to figure it out as you go along. Well, for these fellas, they were told, if you do right, good things happen. If you're bad, bad things happen. And you see somebody who's really suffering, well, they deserve it. They did something wrong somewhere, or maybe it was their parents that did that. So this is ingrained in their thing. It's just the way they treat people. So this is very ironic because they were also taught in their law that if you saw a beggar, you weren't supposed to pass them by. You were to drop at least a few coins in their bucket. You were supposed to be kind to the poor. But you also had this backstory going on. They're poor because they deserve it. So you're... On one hand, you're giving because you're told to give. You're supposed to be a generous person. But while you're giving, you have this attitude inside. Yeah, I'll drop you a few coins because I'm such a nice person, but I know you're really a wicked person. That's why you're having all that. This judgment was coming. Now, it's kind of a rude question. Who sinned, him or his parents, that he was born blind? But it's a great question. For several reasons. First of all, it's a great question because it's what everybody was thinking. They were all thinking it, but nobody was going to ask it. Somebody blurted it out. And I can imagine that everybody else kind of leaned in for the answer. Yeah, we were wondering, but we were too polite to say anything here in public. And it brought to the fore this attitude that everybody had against people who were hurting, people who had difficulty. And part of the lesson that needs to come out of today's message is judging a person by their circumstances is a false measure. You look at somebody, you size them up, you put them in a category, you have an attitude about them. You can say almost immediately, oh, I like him. Oh, I don't like her. You've got these measures, whether you realize it or not, you were brought up with, you've had experiences, you're, oh, I know people like that. Really? You can judge from across. How many have ever been wrong with one of your judgments? And part of what we need to realize is we mess up. We get it wrong. Well, if we use this measure today, we would say that Johnny Erickson Tata must have been a really nasty kid, that as a teenager she was paralyzed and now has been in a wheelchair for over 50 years or whatever. But if you know her at all, you say, oh man, I wish I was half the Christian that she is. But if we applied that same measure over to Vladimir Putin, we'd say, he must be the most righteous dude on the face of the planet. How do you know? Because he's got a $700 million yacht. That's just his yacht. Can you imagine what his house is like? I was trying to think, what could you possibly put on a boat that is worth $700 million? My mind can't even go. So he must really be a great guy because, see, by what Jesus said, you measure by what you see, but God weighs the heart. He knows what's going on inside. So they're judging this guy. Do we ever judge people like that? They dress a certain way. They got a nasty tattoo. They pierced everywhere, whatever. Oh, well, yeah, I know what that is. Judging a person by their circumstances is a false measure. They weren't mean-spirited, just ignorant. In fact, there are people today, I'm sure it's happened to her already, who say that if Johnny Erickson Tata had enough faith, she wouldn't be in that wheelchair anymore. Because all you need is faith and you won't have any problems, or you'll overcome every obstacle there is. And a lot of times what we Christians do to a person who is hurting is we make them feel worse. Well, darling, if you had more faith, then you could. Oh, it's my fault. I don't have enough faith. Or what skeletons do you have in your closet that this is, oh, it's my fault that I'm having this difficulty. And so we put guilt on top of the pain or the suffering. How many enjoy a good dose of guilt? We would say no. But I'll bet the person that is the hardest on you, that piles on guilt more than anybody else, is you yourself. You ever do anything like this? Oh, I'm an idiot. Why did I forget? Why didn't I? Huh? You recognize that person? And God has called us to be loving, to love your neighbor as yourself. Okay, well, I guess I do, because I'm hard on myself, I'll be hard on my neighbor. No, that's not that. That's not the idea here. These people were not mean-spirited. They were taught. Well, that'll teach you to run with scissors in your hand. Well, good for you. Didn't I tell you before? Second lesson comes out of it. Not all problems are caused by personal sin. Now, a lot of things are our fault. We didn't do it right, or we forgot to, or what have you. We messed up. We willfully were bad. But not all problems are caused by personal sin. Some poor folk are just born with a condition or a difficulty, or something is thrust upon them that is very difficult. And so Jesus is teaching us, pity, don't judge. Pity, don't judge. Because when we judge, we interrupt what we normally would do for that person. We see a person, they're in need, we would help them. Well, I'm not helping them because this. Now, see, the hypocrisy that was going on in Jesus' day was they would actually help them, but they would help them while having that attitude. Now, if somebody's going to help you, but they're going to have an attitude about it, what would you say to them? Don't bother. Yeah. Just keep your alms. Just keep moving. I don't need your help. Don't bother. But we are real good at pasting a smile on. We think we're making it look like we're such a good and generous person. And we walk away kind of proud. First of all, we're better than they are because our circumstances. And second of all, I was a generous person to a person that's a jerk. And I'm great. What do you think that looks like to God? Yeah. The stench of pride is going up into God's nostrils. And if there's one thing God hates, he resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. So if you don't have a right attitude about it, don't bother. And if you can't love people that you don't even know, if you can't love people that you do know, don't bother. Don't put on the pretense. You're not fooling God, and you're not helping that person or fooling them either. So they'll drop a few coins and they'll be thinking, you're a jerk, but here I am. I'm really great because I'm helping you. The question is also good because it reveals that prejudice against hurting people. We have this superiority complex that we're competitive, we like to be better than, we like to win. And well, at least I'm not that person, at least I'm not. And there's this prejudice that comes through against hurting people. And it makes everything worse. Let's put a scoop of guilt on top of the pain. Let's put a scoop of guilt on top of the anxiety. Let's put a scoop of guilt on top of the depression. You know, don't you know Christians don't get depressed? Don't you know Christians don't? Well, that's a lie. We can prove it by the scriptures. We see many good people going through seasons of great difficulty and heaviness. But we get a thought in mind. I'll give you an example. A couple years ago, I heard a report that said that 91 or 93% of homeless people in San Francisco are drug addicts. So I'm thinking, those lousy homeless people. Just a bunch of drug addicts. Well, no wonder they're homeless. They snorted away all that they had, you know, it's shame on them. Well, and this week on the radio, I hear a lady said that studies indicate that the number one reason of homelessness, the number one cause of homelessness, is catastrophic loss of family. Their support system is gone. Family's gone, they lose their job, they can't borrow from anybody. Hey, can I come over for the night? Can I borrow your car? No support system left because of a catastrophic loss of family and the support that's there. It changed my heart. See the difference between, they're all a bunch of drug addicts. Well, maybe the reason they're a drug addict is because they've had a catastrophic loss of support, and they're just trying to anesthetize the pain. They don't know what else in the world to do with anything. And we can go into an inner city, and we can start handing out sandwiches to the homeless, and we can give them a blanket, and what a good boy am I. See, Lord, I'm giving to the poor, and you said whoever gives to the poor lends to the Lord, so I'm looking for my reward here. Look at me. I'm associating with such low lives. Oh, boy, watch out. You'll receive something from God, but it probably isn't going to be a reward. That prejudice against hurting people. The Bible says things like Jesus looked at him and loved him. Jesus looked on them and he had compassion on them. They appeared to Jesus like sheep without a shepherd. What do you see when you see people? When you see people different from yourself? When you hear them say a comment that you don't agree with? How quickly do you throw them into a category, into a pit, that they're going to have to do a lot to work, to crawl up out of in your estimation? Be very careful about your prejudice against hurting people. Verse 5 says, "While I'm in the world, I'm the light of the world." After saying this, he spit on the ground, made some mud with the saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. "Go," he told him, "wash in the pool of Siloam." That word means sent. So the man went and washed and came home seeing. I wonder what the disciples thought when they saw Jesus spit on the ground, make some mud, and put it on the man's eyes. "Good for you, you jerk!" Huh? But Jesus didn't talk to the man like everybody else talked to him. Jesus didn't talk like he wasn't even there. Everybody else talked down to the guy. Jesus spoke life into his soul. Toby Mack reminds us, speak life. The power of life and death is in the tongue. So you can give life or you can kill. You can build somebody up or you can tear them down. See how important a word is? I heard a report, 91% of homeless are drug. Oh, yeah, that produced an attitude in me. I heard a different report. Well, they've lost their family. Oh, my, that produced a different emotion in me and a different response to what was going on. You have that power to shape the way people think or feel about another person or a situation in life. And you can either build people up and encourage them along the way, or you can tear them down and you can push them into the ground. You can make their day better, or you can make their day heavier and worse. Jesus said, I am the light of the world. You know, in another place he said that we are the light of the world. Some of us are a little dim. We need to increase the wattage. The world is dark. The world is hurting. The world needs light. Guess who was sent here to light them up? We weren't sent here just to assess the situation. We weren't sent here just to label people. We weren't sent here just to bury them. We are to carry the light. And so we look at somebody and we adjust our attitude. Maybe I look at them and I think this, I don't like that very much. And then I have to remind myself, that's my flesh reaction to a person. What is Jesus' reaction? What did he call me to be? Oh yeah, I need to turn the light on. You ever hurt yourself in the dark? You ran into something or whatever? Light is a wonderful, we used to have this dim light over our sink. And I was always trying to get things. I went to Lowe's and I bought myself a spotlight. Man, I'll tell you what, I get a suntan now when I'm doing the dishes. It's just, boom, turn the lights on. I need to see what I'm doing. And you and I were sent to be the light in other people's lives. We're not supposed to be the little, I can get away. Oh, wow, yeah, that's right, I forgot about that. Light it up a little bit. Let the Lord be your light. So rethink that. You have an attitude about somebody? Okay, stop. Let's change the record here and let's love this person. How can I connect with them? Jesus said, love your enemies. Be good to those who despitefully use you. So don't categorize them. Don't cast them off. Be some interjection of light into their life. As we say, speak life. The disciples' question was irritating. It was belittling. But it was great because it gave Jesus' answer. It raised his hopes. Jesus didn't join in with the other guys. He took the conversation in a whole different direction. And for the first time in his life, somebody defended this poor blind beggar. Jesus said neither. Neither his parents nor him have sinned. What? This was done so that God could... You mean this was part of God's plan all along? God is using me? I didn't even think God even knew me. I thought God cast me off. I thought he forgot about me. That's why I'm blind. No. All along, God was part of this story, part of this narrative, and now it's becoming evident in this moment. So even if the guy doesn't get healed physically, the words of Jesus have given him a little dignity, a little bit of respect, because blind beggars are people too. Hurting people are people too. They deserve some respect. They deserve some dignity. And I can imagine the guy thinking while Jesus is talking, I'm not a beggar in God's eyes. I'm not a beggar in God's eyes. I am valuable. In fact, God cared so much he came to earth and he stopped right here in front of me to have a moment of interaction and to change everything. Another reason, it's a great question, is it allowed this blind man to hear the answer and have a rise of faith in his heart. He had heard the same old tired story all this time, but now there's a new story being told. It's something different. It's something that will raise his soul. The question irritated him, but the answer gave him joy. But I've got a question. Why mud? Why mud? How many enjoy mud on your face? Mud on your face, a big disgrace, waving your banner all over the place. I'm sorry, that's a hymn from a different denomination. I think that's Methodist or something. But mud on your face. Doesn't that seem like a nasty thing to do to a blind guy? The guy can't see it coming. Just yuck, fluck. Ah. I wonder if any of the disciples were thinking, yeah, good for you, you jerk. No, that's not what it was about. Why would Jesus do that? Well, what did God make Adam out of? Dirt. Dirt. So Jesus takes some dirt and he puts it, and all of a sudden there are eyes where there weren't eyes before. Who is this Jesus? He is the creator. And he was just creating new eyes out of... How many wouldn't mind some mud on your eyes if you were blind and it helped you to see? So then he says to him, go, wash in the pool of Siloam. Well, that's kind of dumb, isn't it? He told the blind guy to go somewhere. That's not very nice. He didn't say, come on, buddy, I'm going to take you over here to this pool. You can wash. He didn't say, James, you asked the question. Why don't you take the guy? He said, go find the pool of Siloam, wash. So here's this blind guy. I don't know. Maybe if I'm the blind guy, I protest. Hey, I heard you just touch people and you heal them. What's with the mud and the go stuff? Why would you say that to a blind guy? Go to such and such. Or why not even just, well, go wash. Then he could choose his own place. Here's a place nearby. But he's a blind guy. He's got to figure this out. You realize what that took for him to go. But so the man went and washed and came home seeing. Every step was a step of faith. Why am I doing this? Well, Jesus said I should do it. You know what? I don't want to do this. I don't know where this pool of Siloam is, and there's a well right over here. I'll wash over here. But how many know if you'd have washed anywhere else, that wouldn't have been obedience, he wouldn't have seen. It's kind of like on a scavenger hunt. You're going along, excuse me, which way to the pool of Siloam? Am I on the right path? About how far do you figure it is? Until he, hey, excuse me, is this the pool of Siloam? Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. It took a real effort on his part to fulfill and be obedient to what Jesus had told him to do. So he does, and all of a sudden he can see. Was it worth finding the pool of Siloam? Was it worth going through something other people didn't have to go through? He's the only one that has to. Yeah, it was worth all that and more. The transformation was so complete that his own friends and relatives didn't recognize him. Verse 8, his neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging ask, isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg? Some claimed that he was. Others said, no, he only looks like him. But he himself insisted, I am the man. How then were your eyes opened, they asked. He replied, the man they called Jesus made some mud, put it on my eyes. He told me to go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed, and then I could see. Wow. This is a debate among neighbors. They know this guy. They've known him for years. They've seen him every day for the longest time. Now, I want you to close your eyes and think of a neighbor. Pick one out, any one you want, any one of your neighbors. You got them in mind? Okay, now, let's say they closed their eyes. Do you still recognize them? Well, duh, of course you do. This is a person. The guy looked like he looked the day before, and they're arguing whether it's him or not. I live in a duplex. I have a neighbor, his name is Bill. I've never seen anybody looks like Bill. Bill is Bill. Now, we have three Bills in our neighborhood, and I know each one is different. I know where each one lives. I don't get them mixed up because they have the same name, because they look so different from one another. They're arguing whether it's him or not, and he's insisting that it is. Wouldn't that be wild? What a comical little clip here. No, it's me. No, it's not you. No, really, really, it is. Ah, it can't be you because you're blind. I mean, he's blind, and... Well, if it's not me, how do I know that in the third grade you this or that? I don't know, witchcraft or something. It can't be you. Yeah. If it looks like a duck and it walks like a duck and it goes quack, it's a what? Yeah. So if your neighbor's your neighbor. And he testified to him, the man they called Jesus made some mud and put it on my... Why he did what? No, Jesus doesn't do that. We never heard him do putting mud on people. That doesn't make any sense. Ah, whoa, 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 you ask me what happened. I'm I'm trying to tell you here, and we'll talk a little bit more about that next week, but, you know, he told me to go to Siloam and wash. I went and washed, and then I could see. That's the way it happened. Look, this doesn't make sense to us, and that's not how healing works. How do you know about healing? Jesus wants to free you from the wounding words of others and give you value right within your suffering circumstances. I'm sorry that the Christian community can be some of the hardest people to get along with, can be some of the most judgmental people. Oh, so that happened. Well, this is why. I know. You have no idea. We can judge somebody, and if we really knew their story, we'd be crying. We would be cheering for them that they even survived what they've been through. But we put these labels on people. And then we judge them accordingly. I guess we feel better about it. Our flesh feels better about itself for some reason. And Jesus said, well, you know what? We need to tear off all those labels. Because there but for the grace of God go us. Any one of us could have been born blind. How different our life would have been. Any one of us could have started out in a career like a gangbuster and the company could have gotten sold out or what have you. You know? We've all had difficult circumstances. Funny how we judge others according to their circumstance and we look for pity when we ourselves are suffering. But Jesus wants to come into the middle of that. And even before he heals the disease or he supplies the job or the money that you need, he wants you to feel the value that he has in your life. A few moments ago, I referred to looking in the mirror, and we call ourselves a jerk. We wonder, how do I get to be so old? First words you say, you know, when you look in the mirror, are you kind to yourself? Or are you hard on yourself? Oh, you idiot, what did you do that for? Be kind to yourself. Speak the word of God into your life. The devil is very good. He's worked overtime at putting you down. So take a moment to let Jesus lift you up and don't go back to that old way anymore. Saying no to the lies I tell myself. No, I'm not going to say that to myself anymore. I'm not going to believe that any longer. I'm going to believe what the word of God says. He'll never leave me. He'll never forsake me. As he was with Moses, so he will be with me. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. I am not a loser. I am more than a conqueror through Jesus Christ who gives me strength. They that wait upon the Lord will renew their strength. They'll mount up on wings like eagles. Oh, I'm so tired. Oh, I'm this. Oh, I'm that. Shut up. Change the record. Let it play what God has spoken over us. Receive what he's saying into your life. And please don't hear that as condemning in any way. Listen to what God is saying to you. Receive it. Let it heal the wounds. Well, my dad never told me he loved me. Well, they told me I was a loser. Well, they told me. What did Jesus say? Jesus can heal all of the brokenness. Let him in. Let him lift you up. Let him define you, not the neighbors, not the friends, not the super spiritual people at church, you know. Listen to what he has to say. Oh, I can't do it. Yes, you can. You're more than a conqueror through Jesus Christ, your Lord. Listen and go in faith and strength provided by Jesus Christ alone. Would you stand with me this morning? I just want to be where you are.
I just want to be where you are, living daily in your presence. Draw me near to where you are. be